Hello and welcome to the Stories of Generation Growth, a new series from Changemakers featuring high-growth firms from the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Businesses alumni. I'm Michael Heyman, and throughout this series I'll be joined by my guest, Charlotte Keenan, the program's head. Together we will speak with business leaders who could well be at the heart of a new generation of growth for the UK. But what is Generation Growth? Well, it's an idea driven by the Small Business Manifesto, a call to action which shares insights and policy ideas on how we can release the potential of high-growth companies to thrive. We'll be discussing the key recommendations of that manifesto and how we make them real. In this episode, we're joined by Guri Yahya, founder and CEO of Upskill Universe, a company dedicated to helping businesses bring key skills to their workforce. Guri, Charlotte, great to see you. Welcome to Changemakers. Guri, brilliant business, Upskill Universe. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, well, thanks for having us. Upskill Universe, I launched about 9 years ago. And we essentially help businesses bring future skills to their business and to society as well. It's really important for businesses to appreciate the power of skills can have to grow a business and how important it is and is vital to a business. But also looking at the responsibility they have to help us close a gap in society. So since I launched the organization, we've been building some of the largest digital skills programs, even globally, to help people feel they can thrive in this society.
Yeah. I mean, it feels to me like this is the sort of business, when people say, look, there is a generation of businesses that are doing the things that the state used to do. This is the sort of business that seems to have be right of its time in terms of actually we're a skills business, we're addressing something that is a national, you know, challenge, but business may have an answer. I mean, do you find that the kind of the entrepreneurial spirit gives you something different, something, I guess, extra in terms of addressing the challenge?
I'd like to think so. You know, if I look at the skills system in the UK, or even the education system in the UK, I feel it's fundamentally broken. I don't feel it's keeping up with the needs of the workforce. The skills or what you learn in school is not quite what the workforce needs. And there's lots of stats that talk about that. And I think as an entrepreneur, I mean, I've got an insatiable need to solve problems. But with regards to the skills piece, which is a big problem to solve, I can move quite agilely. So building a business that can adapt to the changing skills needed in the workforce, finding a way to scale the delivery of those skills is really what I get excited about. And I think it's allowed us to be able to scale as a business.
Yeah. Interesting business of our time, Charlotte.
Yeah. And in relation to your comments on the UK, you know, skills landscape, when we did the 10,000 Small Businesses Manifesto, only 12% of you thought that the education system was fit for purpose in terms of skill provision. So in terms of what you're doing, absolutely core and central. And I think maybe, Guri, maybe bring it to life a little bit more, right? When you talk about scaling it and you talk about the digital platforms, obviously that's in terms of upskilling the next generation, but are you doing anything in terms of upskilling existing workplaces and also thinking through the work you're doing around diversity? You know, there's a lot of learning to be done in existing workplaces, right?
There is. I feel, and I'll go back to kind of where the skill system and education system is at the moment. I was reading recently that the participation levels in adult learning, now the education, have dropped by about 2/3 in the last 20 years, which means there's an accessibility issue. There's a mindset shift around the need for skills in the workplace. You know, when we think about bringing it to the workplace, we need to understand what do businesses need. And as a business owner myself, it's thinking about what do we invest in tech-wise? You know, how do we shape a business that's fit to scale? What foundational skills do we need? So we really focus on we focus a lot on the tech skills, but actually nowadays, the softer skills, the power skills, as we call them, leadership skills, skills that businesses really need to have foundationally within their businesses to grow a business are absolutely key. I'm really blessed to be able to drive skills development at scale across society, but I get excited when businesses start to think we need to invest in our business to grow, and they see the outcomes and the power that it has on a business.
How clear do you think businesses are themselves in your experience in terms of understanding what those future skills actually are? Because I'm thinking about an AI-driven world, a disrupted world, where actually business models of the future are being created right now. When it comes to people, do you find that actually it's a fairly straightforward set of skills that the businesses are after, or do you think actually they're learning on the job as well?
They're definitely learning on the job. It's not quite so simple for many reasons. I mean, the skills that we need are changing quite rapidly. I mean, the half-life of skills has reduced dramatically over the years with the launch of lots of new tech. New jobs have been created. And as a business owner, you're just trying to find ways to keep your business alive,
yeah,
and then grow it. So in terms of knowing what you need your teams to learn, where the capability gaps are, it's an evolving challenge.
Yeah.
And it's not an easy one to solve. You can't just do a snapshot skills gap analysis overnight and then just do it every week. Business owners don't think that way.
So Professor Stephen Hawking said that AI was either the best thing or the worst thing that was going to happen to humanity. Which one is it?
I think it's the best thing. I think if we control this role, I think if we invest it in the right way, I think if we democratize access to the skills needed to really use it effectively, mm-hmm, I think we can benefit massively from it. It's another major technological change, similar to smartphone invention or the assembly line. They will fundamentally change the way we work. But
there will be job losses on the way, presumably. Mm-hmm.
There will be, but there'll be job creation as well. Mm. You know, there's always that stat about 75% of the jobs that we'll have in 2050 don't exist yet, right? So it's about being prepared to have those jobs be created and have people with the right mindset to be ready to step into those kind,
yeah,
of jobs.
I mean, mindset for an AI world, what do you see as the component parts of that?
Well, so we train a lot of businesses on AI, and what we find is probably the number one challenge people have is that fear that it will take their jobs, right? So what we try to do is get people to think that AI is not a replacer of you, right? It's about using it as a tool, mm, like any other tool that we have, right? As a tool for you to be able to be more productive, more effective, you know, live a better life, feel more confident in what you do, and give you more space and time to be more creative,
yeah,
right? So I think the mindset shift's about reframing what AI is.
So it's being put as the three C's that you need in an AI world are creativity, curiosity, and critical thinking. Now, you mentioned creativity. These are going to be the way that, I suppose, we unleash the imaginative possibilities of AI.
Absolutely. I mean, look, as human beings, you know, we are insatiably curious beings, right? And I think it's important that we can tap into that in a way that helps us continue to live out the best of us being us. AI, again, is a tool, right? Mm. So it should allow for you to, you know, be creative. But the critical thinking is also really important. I feel, you know, people underestimate the importance of critical thinking, especially in the age of AI, with misinformation that's out there, with, you know, the just, you know, how easy it is to access information. It's important that we can think critically, you know, and utilize the best of our minds to ensure that we can make the right decisions based on the data that we get. But again, it's the human in control. That's the key.
So presumably there's a mindset challenge as well, because the thing I was thinking about is that, you know, we live in a generation where loads of the jobs that we've gone on to inherit, our parents' generation would have had no identification with, mm-hmm, or understanding what came next. And of course, we're going to be the generation, mm-hmm, that looks forward in a few years' time and go, wow, where did those jobs come from? In terms of the kind of the mindset to be a kind of skills adopter, somebody that's can see where future talent can thrive. What's your advice to leaders that are thinking, actually, we want to be ready for the future?
I mean, the first thing is be comfortable with change. As a business leader, you should be fairly comfortable with uncomfortable situations because they get thrown at you every day. Mm. But when it comes to learning and when it comes to the capabilities you need in the organization, those will change. It's inevitable. The skills that brought you to where you are today won't get you to the next stage. So you need to understand, you know, and think, be more forward thinking, right? Think about the future, about what technology you're investing in, about what your peers and your competitors are doing in that space, and keep yourself at the forefront of it. You want to create an environment that is focused on continuous learning.
Yeah.
Right. Upskilling and reskilling is one of the most powerful retention tools in an organization. So really investing in that growth mindset, wanting people to feel agile and want to learn new things, it helps them feel connected to the company. And it's a great investment tool.
Charlotte, let's bring in the Small Business Manifesto, because actually, I mean, skills is the biggie, right?
It's the number one challenge that our small businesses have spoken about in terms of what they need.
I mean, when I look at the list of companies that you've helped, I mean, Google, Samsung, Lloyd's, BT, very, very large corporations. What about small growth firms in terms of their openness, I guess, to the same sorts of assistance in terms of digital learning and social impact programs? Do you feel that this is in danger of being a big company game, or do you actually think that small firms actually are waking up, smelling the coffee, doing the things that need to be done to actually be really active players in this space?
A lot of small firms are realizing they need to be more up to date here. The big firms obviously have the resources to invest in it. They have entire teams that are focused on L&D and skills development and capability development as well. And small firms, if you're not familiar with it, what it takes to upskill your organization, it's where do I start?
Yeah.
How do I do so in an affordable way? What's the outcome I'm going to get? Especially with such a changing workforce where you invest in somebody, but the tenure of a Gen Z-er in your organization is short compared to what you might want someone to stay with the organization is. So, big firms, and the way we typically tackle it, big firms, we actually put the responsibility on them to be able to provide wider training to businesses. So a lot of large firms like the Googles of the world with their Google Digital Garage programs, BT, Lloyd's, that are investing in helping small firms have greater access to training is really powerful.
Yeah.
And we feel there's definitely a responsibility to do that. But what I love about that is also big firms are coming to the sort of point of view that you can drive profits through social impact, through programs that actually can help people thrive, not just communities, but also businesses as well. But there's a lot that small business can learn from how big firms adopt this, this approach. But what we're trying to do is make that access into learning development for small firms easier and more accessible.
It's the other way around as well. I mean, big business can learn a huge amount from small businesses, right? And if I think through many of the small businesses that we have in our 10,000 small businesses alumni population, you know, they are purpose-driven, they are focused, they have a deep ingrained culture within that business, a values proposition, right, that even though they may be a team of 20 or 30, that loyalty to the business inculcates is really pretty extraordinary.
And the performance culture.
And the performance
that
culture.
That you get as a result of that. And I think, I suppose I'm sat here listening to you and I'm sort of thinking, well, on the one hand, I can see how with a small firm, you could run a social impact program that you can very clearly see demonstrable results on, and that can inspire the culture of an organization to be more excited about its future, more connected, more committed. At the same time, a lot of small firms will say, well, look, we look at larger organizations, they can do the milk round, they can do, they can employ year round. We've got very, very different challenges in terms of our ability to take this kind of work and I suppose programatize it and make it a part of our kind of lifeblood in the organization. I suppose the question is, if somebody's sitting here thinking, that's me, what's the advice you'd give them in terms of things they could do to take some positive first steps here?
Around training and
social impact. I mean, I guess it's the kind of thing about, if you don't have a department that's doing this and you're an entrepreneur running a growth company, how do you use that agility, that speed to make decisions to actually make impact here?
Yeah, so I I'm glad that you mentioned that small businesses can react quickly, right? I think often businesses don't feel they have the ability to do that or the authority to be able to do that. And they'll feel whatever they do has got to be something that just gives to charity, right? Mm-hmm. But you can do more than that, with an organization. There are some really exciting tech startups that are creating products that can be game-changing to society. And it's about how do your products support society being more of a leveler, right?
Yeah.
And having more equitable approaches to help people thrive in society as well. So as a small business, firstly, in the whole idea of corporate social responsibility extends beyond corporates, right? I think businesses do have a responsibility to give back to society. And it's fairly simple. You know, you really define, you know, what audience would you like to support that really fits in with your ethos, your values as an organization? What resources do you have to be able to support that? There are organizations, and we do that with small organizations and startups and scale-ups with very easy programs to stand up, to be able to give back, to invest in a local cloud bootcamp, for example, to help get marginalized communities through and learning everything from cloud engineering to data science to cybersecurity.
Mm.
So there are programs that you can invest in that can drive, you know, more equality across society, especially with access to tech.
Right.
Right?
So you're working with marginalized communities
yes.
a lot.
Yeah.
If you were to hold the mirror up to business on behalf of that community, what are they seeing when they see business?
It's a lack of trust.
Mm-hmm.
They feel businesses are keen to sell to and take from than support the growth. There's this feeling of, you know, it's inaccessible for a lot of marginalized communities. I think even Deloitte did a survey last year which said 19% of underrepresented individuals feel digital career pathways are inaccessible to them compared to 60% of non-marginalized communities.
Mm-hmm.
So when they look at big tech or financial services or retail banks, they say, what's there for me, right? Like, is this built for me? Does the leadership look like me? Could mm-hmm. I aspire to be that? So I think there is, if you're looking to build that relationship, that trust with those in those communities, you need to invest, you need to support, you need to really make it feel accessible.
Mm. Charlotte, what's your take?
I mean, I agree, invest, trust and support, but also listen and learn. Right. And I think many of the big organizations are going on, you know, a learning journey. Right. And as I said at the outset, this is absolutely a two-way street.
Yeah.
As we think about, you know, marginalized communities, you know, ensuring that they've got the opportunity and the talent, but also ensuring that, you know, bigger organizations like ours, you know, we're looking for the best possible talent wherever, whatever that looks like.
Yeah, well, I think also in terms of the talent, your organizations thinking about local communities and building that talent pathway is so important.
Mm.
You know, I do feel often, and I talked about profit and doing good. I think there is a way to get the balance in the two, but also feel about how you can grow your talent pool. I mean, from an employer branding proposition, you need to be thinking your staff want to see you as an organization doing good in the community. Right? Being somebody who's trying to close a skills gap to create more equalities for individuals, but to access that as well. So you're absolutely right. I think there are talent pools out there that there are hidden talent pools that people aren't tapping into. I think that's 100%. What we're trying to get access to.
And I think what you're talking about is the ultimate test case, right? You know, because a lot of people, when they hear phrases like business is a force for good, they'll say, well, what does that mean? And what can you do? And what is that? Well, this is a very practical, tangible area where you can get involved, you can be the agent of change, you can be that agent of social mobility. I mean, that is something presumably more businesses need to sort of hear loud and clear, because it needs more practical activism, doesn't it?
It does. Well, also the whole, you're getting a lot more businesses that call themselves purpose-led, right? But they're struggling to justify what that actually means,
yeah.
right? And that will come through in your actions. Right? What do you invest in? How do you support that pathway into your organization? Are you making your tech roles more accessible, right? You know, how important is inclusion to you as an organization? You know, are you really all about social change, right?
Yeah.
Can you help drive a positive impact in the world? Skills, I believe, is a fantastic way to do it.
Yeah.
I think it's a really powerful way to do it. And I think businesses, you know, can invest in it in the right way. It's better for the economy. It's better for society.
Well, that's what I was thinking about. Does your work also show upticks in performance in terms of actually better integrated companies delivering better outcomes on behalf of customers, growing better, more performance-oriented?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the stats show that if you invest in an employee's learning and development, you drive a 53% higher performance on that. You also If you do this in a more equitable way for those individuals that feel a bit or like they don't belong in an organization, you don't just drive high performance, but you drive sort of higher collaboration across yeah. teams, right? So there are clear results. And what we're learning, and you know, we've delivered programs for many years now, and we listen closely to the impact that we drive across the organization, the cultures that are being transformed by the programs that we drive. And it is really about fostering an environment where people feel like they can belong, feel mm. like they can thrive. And inevitably they drive high performance, which obviously leads to profits, revenue, the rest of it as well. And I feel, you know, businesses not investing in skills in their organizations are missing out on a huge amount of unrecognized mm. revenue, right?
Charlotte, you're nodding. What?
Yeah, well, I mean, stats are well known, right? I mean, yeah. diverse workplaces are better performing workplaces. Mm. You know, that is absolutely undeniable. And yes, it matters for big businesses, but you know, going back to what you were talking about in terms of small businesses, right? I mean, you know, jobs across the country, private sector jobs are led by small businesses.
Yeah.
And the multiplier effect and the role that those small businesses have as the bedrock of their communities, it's extraordinary, right? So actually ensuring that businesses are putting talent and skilling that talent and investing in that talent at the core of what they're doing.
Yeah. So thinking about the kind of the what's next, because I suppose in terms of concluding our conversation together, I suppose my sense is that there is a destination here, right? You know, there is an equitable society where everybody gets a chance, where, you know this whole idea where, you know, talent is infinite, but opportunity isn't. We actually reverse that actually we create this opportunity-led society. But I suppose the question is, how far along that journey do you think we are? I mean, I've found your story incredibly motivating in terms yeah. of the difference that you're making. But in terms of how far you feel we've traveled and how far we have to go, where in the journey are we?
I still think we're quite a bit behind where we need to be. I mean, the stats will say on the productivity scale, how the UK fares against other countries, you know, we're not particularly high. For a country that has resources and investment in this space or should invest in this space, we should be doing more from an innovation perspective. We should be creating better pathways into tech. We should be able to get more talent to really thrive as well. You know, look, I'm on a journey. Right, we've been here for like 9 years. We've trained 690,000 people globally in wow. skills. So, you
good
know,
numbers.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I still think we've only scratched the surface.
In terms of the work you've done globally, mm-hmm. where would you pit the UK in terms of our international peers? In terms of the skills piece, what are the differences that you see?
In terms of, I would say the private sector investing in skills, I think we're quite mature in that space. Mm-hmm. The UK and the US are very mature. I think one of the fast growing markets is probably the Asian region. Mm-hmm. Asia Pacific, there's definitely a lot more investment. You'll see the likes of Singapore, Malaysia all talking from a government level about AI skilling across businesses, across the country, and heavy investment. They're just moving quickly, right? And so we're seeing some of our programs certainly going east and supporting organizations there, because our model is to help organizations stand up upskilling programs quite quickly locally. So we localize a lot of our programs. You know, Singapore's a good example. They've got the Skills Futures program, which very much government led, but they give tax incentives to businesses to train their staff on tech, which I think is fantastic. You know, that's smart. Really showing how invested they are as an economy to drive that level of upskilling. So I think the UK feels mature from a corporate training perspective, SME training. I think we're fairly low down in the scale with regards to how much small businesses invest in training, especially across Europe. We're really not that high up there as well. So there is a mindset shift that needs to happen to get businesses to really.
I mean, I'm just sat here thinking as you're speaking is that the future is coming very, very quickly in terms of just how much change business society is going to have to face, and actually how organizations don't see kind of things like investment in training as almost like the tax on the business, but actually the liberator of talent mm-hmm. for the business seems to be the big sort of question.
Yeah, it's a mindset shift. Yeah. Honestly, I think there's a narrative that we need to shift towards, which gets business thinking, invest in your people, invest in your talent, invest in the skills for the future, and you can thrive.
I think that's a great place to leave it, Gauri. Thank you so much for joining Charlotte and I on Changemakers, sharing the story of Upskill Universe. Brilliant story to share with all of our listeners.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Really excited. Thank you.